Lesson 5. Outcomes. Explain the process of planning the initial response at hazardous materials incidents. Explain ways of implementing response objectives and action options. Planning the initial response. Once the incident analysis is underway and there is a basic understanding of the hazards and products involved, the IC must use that information to plan the response. Thinking the situation through and developing a solid strategy with realistic response objectives will deliver a successful and safe outcome. Using a response model can simplify the problem-solving process because most response models incorporate an entire problem-solving process. An information gathering or input stage. A processing or planning stage. An implementation or output stage. A review or evaluation stage. There are many models from which to choose. Most models move through each of the basic stages in problem solving and decision making, and the model used will often be dictated by departmental policy. APE response model. APIE is a simple response model containing the basic four-step problem solving process model elements. Analyze the incident. Plan the initial response. Implement the response. Evaluate progress. Risk-based response. A risk-based response uses information, science, and technology to mitigate a hazardous materials incident. The key is to equip responders with the critical information that is needed to make good decisions, while not overwhelming them with nice-to-know information. Product identification is a vital element in successful mitigation of a hazmat incident. While this is true, the reality of the situation is that it may not always be possible. In either case, implement a risk-based response for all hazardous materials incidents. Risk-based response is a hierarchy of decisions needed to protect responders. As with most successful incidents, the response starts with a thorough size-up, identifying the immediate hazards so that decisions can be made in a logical and educated manner. Too much time can be wasted attempting to research a property that may not exist, may not be present, or cannot be found. While a strong size-up helps with prediction, it is detection and monitoring equipment that will help protect the responders. A risk-based response is a quick and efficient way to thin-slice information and make educated, life-saving decisions. Developing the Incident Action Plan, IAP. Incident Action Plans, IAPs, are critical to the rapid, effective control of emergency operations. An IAP is a well-thought-out, organized course of events developed to address all phases of incident control within a specified time. The timeframe specified is one that allows the least negative action to continue. Written IAPs may not be necessary for short-term, routine operations. However, large-scale or complex incidents require the creation and maintenance of a written plan for each operational period, Figure 25.25. Action planning starts with identifying the response objective, strategy, to achieve a solution to the confronted problems. A response objective is broad in nature and defines what has to be done. Once the strategy has been defined, the command staff needs to select the action options, tactics, the how, where, and when, to achieve the objective. Action options are measurable in both time and performance. An IAP also provides for necessary support resources such as water supply, utility control, or SCBA cylinder filling. The IAP ties the entire problem-solving process together by stating what the analysis has found, what the plan is, and how it shall be safely implemented. Once the plan is established and resources are committed, it is necessary to assess its effectiveness. Gather and analyze information so that necessary modifications may be made to improve the plan if necessary. This step is part of a continuous size-up process. Elements of an IAP. Elements of an IAP include the following. Strategies/incident objectives. Resource assignment and needs. Hazard statement. Safety plan and message. Current situation summary. Accomplishments. Risk assessment. Protective measures. Current and projected weather conditions. Status of injuries. Communications plan. Medical plan. All incident personnel must function according to the IAP. Company officers or sector officers should follow predetermined procedures, and every action should be directed toward achieving the goals and objectives specified in the plan. For practical purposes, all first responders should be familiar with the concept of IAPs and site safety plans because they have a direct effect on actions taken at an emergency incident scene. A first responder assuming the role of IC will need to develop and implement an IAP. Common response objectives and action options at hazmat incidents. Once first responders have a basic understanding of the problem, they can begin to plan their solution by establishing response objectives, strategies, and action options, tactics. Response objectives are broad statements of what must be done to resolve an incident. Action options are specific operations that must be done in order to accomplish those goals. Skill Sheet 25-4 provides steps for identifying action options at a hazardous materials incident. Response objectives must be selected based on the following criteria. Their ability to be achieved. Their ability to prevent further injuries and/or deaths. Their ability to minimize environmental and property damage within the constraints of safety, time, equipment, and personnel. Risk-based response objectives are based upon the hazards present at the incident. For example, if materials with higher levels of toxicity are involved, a more cautious response using higher levels of personal protective equipment might be used. An incident involving a hazardous material in a gaseous or vapor form might dictate a different strategy for control than an incident involving a hazardous material in a solid or liquid form that is far easier and safer to contain. Some additional risk-based response principles are as follows. Activities that present a significant risk to the safety of members shall be limited to situations where there is a potential to save endangered lives. Activities that are routinely employed to protect property shall be recognized as inherent risks to the safety of members, and actions shall be taken to reduce or avoid these risks. No risk to the safety of members shall be acceptable when there is no possibility to save lives or property. Making the right strategic decision at a hazmat incident is critical because of the variety of developments that can occur. Poorly developed decision-making processes can lead to greater problems. References such as the Emergency Response Guidebook's orange-bordered pages, relevant safety data sheet sections, shipping papers with emergency response information, and other resources may provide some response information and guidance. Some common response objectives at hazardous materials incidents are isolation, notification, identification, protection, life safety, rescue, figure 25.26, spill control/confinement, leak control/containment, crime scene and evidence preservation, fire control, recovery/termination. While these are some of the common response objectives, ICs can set whatever objectives they deem appropriate, using whatever terms they prefer. Rescue might be considered an important response objective at one incident but not at another. If conditions at an incident change suddenly, rapid evacuation might become a response objective that springs to the top of the priority list. Response objectives are prioritized depending on available resources and the particular details of the incident. Some response objectives may not be needed if the hazard is not present at the incident. If the material involved is non-flammable, fire control may not be an issue. Some goals may require the use of specialized resources, such as chemical protective clothing or specific absorbent materials, that are not yet available and therefore must be postponed or eliminated. Others may require the use of so large a percent of the available resources that the ability to complete other objectives might be compromised. The response objectives listed in this chapter are very broad strategic categories, and mitigation at an actual incident may require a variety of response objectives based on the problems presented at the scene. Action options are the specific tactics that are used to accomplish response objectives. These are the tasks the responder will be asked to perform in order to mitigate the incident. For example, if isolation is the action objective, evacuating people from the hazard area might be an appropriate response option. Table 25.1 Typical hazmat problems with potential response objectives and action options provides common problems presented at hazmat incidents with more narrowly defined strategies and tactics. Determining the suitability of available personal protective equipment. Due to the nature of hazmat incidents, responders must be able to use SOPs and other resources to determine if their PPE is adequate to perform their assigned tasks at an incident. If PPE is determined to be inadequate, the IAP will need to be revised. PPE requirements may differ depending on the following. Responders' mission/assignment. Products involved. Circumstances at the incident, for example, in a confined space. Identifying emergency decontamination needs. If responders or the public come into contact with, or potentially contact, hazardous materials, it may be necessary to remove the hazardous material as quickly as possible. This process is called emergency decontamination, emergency decon. If responders or the public exhibit signs and symptoms of exposure to hazardous materials or product is visible on their skin or clothing, emergency decon should be considered. Implementing response objectives and action options. The purpose of the IAP is to develop the necessary strategy and tactics to effect a positive and safe outcome. Once the strategies are in place, tactics are developed. Tactics are the operational tasks that are used to accomplish the strategies. Tactics should be measurable in both time and performance. They should be evaluated to ensure that they will meet the strategic goals that were put in place. Some typical hazmat strategies and tactics that you may be assigned to implement are presented in the following sections, including hazard control zones, protection of the public, product control, emergency decontamination, protection of responders, protection of the environment and property, fire control, evidence preservation, hazard control zones. Hazard control zones provide the scene control required at hazmat and terrorist incidents to prevent interference by unauthorized persons, help regulate first responders' movements within the zones, minimize contamination, including secondary contamination from exposed or potentially exposed victims, help ensure accountability of all personnel operating at large, multi-agency response incidents. Hazard control zones divide the levels of hazard of an incident, and what a zone is called generally depicts this level. These zones are often referred to as hot, warm, and cold, figure 25.27. While typically represented as concentric circles, control zones take whatever shape is needed, often dictated by the features of the location and incident. Control zones are not necessarily static and can be adjusted as the incident changes. The Canadian Centre for Occupational Health and Safety, COES, and Environment and Climate Change Canada, ECCC, refer to these zones are also referred to as site safety zones or hazard control zones. The U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, refer to these zones collectively as site work zones. They are sometimes called scene control zones. Other countries may use different terminology for these zones. Different agencies may have different control zone needs. At incidents involving crimes, law enforcement may designate a zone to incorporate the entire crime scene, and this zone may not correspond to traditional fire service activities. For example, at terrorist incidents in the U.S., the FBI establishes an evidence search perimeter 1.5 times the distance of the farthest known piece of evidence, figure 25.28. These law enforcement zones might change as evidence is processed and the crime scene is released. When establishing these zones, the crime scene dynamics may create a need for flexibility on the part of all agencies in the unified command. Incidents involving bombs are an example of where traditional control zones and the operations that are usually conducted within those zones may vary. Because of the blast effects, there may be multiple buildings in danger of collapse, which will require the designation of a much larger hot zone. In order to preserve evidence in a bombing incident, law enforcement may require that the hot zone be extended out as far as the perimeter of the debris field. In these cases, there will likely be tight perimeter control as well as a large hot zone, figure 25.29. Due to these logistics, responders may need to conduct operations such as triage, treatment, and transportation, in an area designated as the hot zone. An event that has multiple devices or release points is unique to terrorist events and may require a non-traditional scene management plan. In these cases, there may be more than one hot zone for a given incident. Whether the incident involves bombs or multiple devices, it is necessary for the incident commander to remain flexible and establish a scene management plan and control zones to meet the needs of all of the responders to the incident. Responders at the incident must be made aware of control zones as they are established. Hot zone. Traditionally, the hot zone, also called exclusion zone, is an area surrounding an incident that is potentially dangerous either because it presents a threat in the form of a hazardous material or the effects thereof. The area may be contaminated by chemical warfare agents, or it may have the potential to become contaminated by a released hazardous material. The area has been or could be exposed to the gases, vapors, mists, dusts, or runoff of the material. Responders must have proper training and wear appropriate personal protective equipment, PPE, to work in the hot zone or to support work being done inside the hot zone. There will be established access and egress points to ensure both accountability and designated PPE prior to entry. The hot zone extends far enough to prevent people outside the zone from suffering ill effects from the released material, explosion, or other threat. Work performed inside the hot zone is often limited to highly trained personnel such as SWAT teams, USNR teams, hazardous materials technicians, joint hazard assessment teams, JHAT, mission-specific operations, and bomb technicians, EOD personnel. Warm zone. The warm zone, also called contamination reduction zone or corridor, is an area adjoining the hot zone and extending to the cold zone, see following section. The warm zone serves as a buffer between the hot and cold zones and as the decontamination location for personnel and equipment exiting the hot zone. Decontamination usually takes place within a corridor, Deccan Corridor, located in the warm zone, figure 25.30. At incidents involving crimes, parts of the warm zone may be part of the crime scene. Responders should create minimal disturbance. PPE will normally be required in this zone, although in some circumstances it may be at a reduced level from the hot zone. Monitoring and detection may be conducted around the perimeter of the warm zone to determine the extent of the hazards. The Unified Commander or the IC will approve the level of PPE required for work within this zone after input from others. Cold zone. The cold zone, also called support zone, surrounds the warm zone and is used to carry out all logistical support functions of the incident. Workers in the cold zone are not required to wear PPE because the zone is considered safe. However, some personnel may still be wearing PPE, such as body armor, in case of secondary devices and slash or attacks to ensure safe evacuation in the case of rapid expansion of the hot zone. The cold zone is the site for the following. Multi-agency command post, CP. Donning slash doffing area. Staging area. Backup teams. Research teams. Logistical support. Criminal investigation teams. Transportation areas. Triage slash treatment slash rehabilitation, rehab. Staging. The staging area needs to be located in an isolated spot in a safe area where occupants cannot interfere with ongoing operations. Staging minimizes confusion and freelancing at the scene. Staging areas should be located at spots in the cold zone where occupants cannot interfere with ongoing operations. A safe direction of travel to the staging area should be broadcast to all resources responding to the incident. Ideally, emergency responders and equipment at terrorist incidents should be staged between multiple locations in case staging areas are attacked. Some departments use the concept of a cornering/quartering staging procedure, figure 25.31. This has two basic purposes. Spreads out emergency response personnel from one another to limit their exposure as a target and minimizes the effects of a secondary type of attack/device. Allows personnel to envelop the scene and provide multiple treatment areas or operation function points. Protection of responders. The first priority at any incident is the protection and safety of emergency responders. Injured or incapacitated responders are unable to assist in mitigation efforts or protection of the public. Measures to protect responders include the following. Staying uphill, upstream, and upwind of hazardous materials. Wearing appropriate PPE. Using time, distance, and shielding for protection. decontaminating responders when necessary, ensuring accountability of all personnel, tracking and identifying all personnel working at an incident, working as part of a team or buddy system, assigning safety officers, putting evacuation and escape procedures in place. The following sections describe some of these measures in greater detail. Wearing PPE during a risk-based response. Responders must wear appropriate PPE to protect against hazards. The AHJ issues personal protective equipment, and responders must be trained in its selection, use, and maintenance. They must be aware of thermal issues such as heat stress.